We're all familiar with tragedy. If we haven't been caught up ourselves in an event that causes great suffering or distress, then we will have at least seen images or heard stories, reports of the aftermath of tragedies. And it's often a feature of what we class as a tragedy that perhaps they didn't actually need to happen. Things could and should have been so different. This is part of the pathos of a tragedy, that with good advice, with proper precautions and due consideration and preparation, it wouldn't have happened this way. In a literary sense, we know the tragedies, Shakespearean tragedies written in the old Latin style, all of them seem to have, well, they all have an unhappy ending. Life cut short, potential not realised, love unappreciated and unrequited, and danger unperceived. Palm Sunday is a day in the calendar of the Christian Church when we reflect on the events of a day when the Son of God rode into Jerusalem to the acclaim of the same people who, a matter of days later, would bathe for his blood. A crucifixion that need not have happened, it seems, had the fickle crowds and the plotting religious leaders not been so misguided, ignorant, self-seeking, and closed off from God. Surely a part of us identifying with the story would say, "Surely not, Lord. God forbid that that should ever happen to you." The first five chapters of Isaiah are actually some of the gloomiest in the Bible. They describe the rebellion against God of those he cherished and the ensuing darkness and despair. The privilege they had been given is well described in Deuteronomy. Let me share a few verses of Deuteronomy 4, verses 31 to 40. "For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He will not abandon or destroy you or forget you and forget the covenant with your forefathers, which he confirmed to them by oath. Ask now about the former days, long before your time, from the day God created man on the earth. Ask from one end of the heavens to the other. Has anything so great as this ever happened? Or has anything like it ever been heard of? Has any other people heard the voice of God speaking out of fire as you have and lived? Has any God ever tried to take for himself one nation out of another nation by testings, by miraculous signs and wonders, by war, by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, or by great and awesome deeds like all the things the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your very eyes? You were shown these things so that you might know that the Lord is God, and besides him there is no other. From heaven he made you hear his voice to discipline you. On earth he has showed you his great fire, and you heard his words from out of the fire. Because he loved your forefathers and chose their descendants after them, he brought you out of Egypt by his presence and his great strength, to drive out before you nations greater and stronger than you, and to bring you into their land, to give it to you for your inheritance as it is today. Acknowledge and take to heart this day that the Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other. Keep his decrees and commands, which I am giving you today, so that it may go well with you and your children after you, and that you may live long in the land the Lord your God gives you for all time." That is a relatively long passage of consistent love shown by God, who doesn't need us, but who desires to give us the privilege of knowing him, of being in covenant with him. There can be few more passionate pleas to humanity to tune in to this love and to listen and to find fullness of life. Remarkably, though, that supreme generosity and love had been rejected, and the consequences for them were clearly spelled out, as they had been when the law was first given. Of course, it would happen over and over again a number of times throughout Israel's history, but the most savage rejection of all would come when God came to earth in person. Jesus told a parable as a final challenge to the religious leaders to perceive what God was doing among them. A series of messengers were sent out to this vineyard to collect a tribute of fruit for the owner, but they were treated with increasing hostility. On each occasion, God had responded to their rejection and disrespect with patience, with tolerance, with compassion and love. But finally, the owner sent his own son, believing that he, at least, would be treated with respect. This is a parable which ends in the tragedy of the murder of the vineyard owner's son, who was killed so that the tenants could take what they wanted by force, take that which had been given to them to look after as stewards. Does it sound familiar? Or so they thought, because the consequences of rejecting and killing the son would in fact be their own death warrant. They would not discover or enjoy life. It would be taken from them by their own decision. And what's more, their vineyard, held in stewardship for the owner, would be handed over to others. Now, the others is very interesting, because you imagine that then became a trigger point for the teachers of the law, who knew full well what Jesus was saying. If the people of Israel, the inheritors of the covenant, the people God had said, as he said in the passage from Deuteronomy, I've chosen you, I've invested my love in you, all I'm calling you to do is follow a lifestyle which will reflect who I am, but will give you fullness of life. When that is rejected, then God will hand that privilege over to others. Not the chosen people any longer. But of course, the teachers of the law knew full well that Jesus was saying this would be given to the Gentiles, and that was lighting the blue touch paper. The imagery would have been crystal clear. Israel's religious leaders had rejected and dishonored God, so their position and inheritance would be handed over to the Gentiles. This was just too much for the listening teachers of the law. Rather than making them reconsider their attitude to this prophet who claimed to be more than a prophet, the Son of God, in fact, they instantly became more deeply entrenched than ever in the continuation of the way their predecessors over the centuries had rejected and killed and stoned the prophet sent by God to bring the people back to him. And the die was cast. They sought a way of killing Jesus. The parable, as well as a retelling of Israel's history of rejecting God's messengers, became also a literal prediction of the death at their hands of his son. So was the treatment of Jesus a tragedy? Well, in some ways, the cruel and tortured death of an innocent, a man who could only act and speak pure good, condemned to die because of evil, will always rank as the greatest travesty of justice. But was it a tragedy? Can we truly see as tragic the means by which we can finally be reconciled to God and at peace with him? Can we count that as a tragedy? That was God's plan, after all, that by his own death he would finally obliterate all of the stains of sin on our hands and on our hearts and upon his beloved creation. How can this be a tragedy? It is a death in which the Christian church have come to rejoice. Bizarre though that sounds, because the death of the Son of God is the most positive, wonderful thing that God could ever have done for you and me. The truth is that it was the heaviest price for Christ to pay. It was utterly unjust that he should die, and it was especially poignant that those for whom he died rejected and despised him. It was at the same time both a tragedy of the greatest proportions and a blessing of the highest order. There was no other good enough to pay the price of sin. There is no other name in heaven or on earth by which we may be saved. No one comes to the Father except by me. There was and is no other way God could achieve this for us. It had to be this way. Humanity, being so deeply flawed, could never have seen the truth, never been able to recognize God's holiness and emulate it by living holy lives ourselves. We needed the injustice of a cruel death, the tragedy of a holy life cut short, the willingness of the innocent Son of God to die for the guilty by giving himself completely into our hands. It is only when all of our self-justification and self-regard has been destroyed, when we see what we truly are, how distant and remote we are from a holy God, and when we see that we could never be acceptable to God without that tragedy, when we are cut to the heart, as Luke describes the reaction to Peter's first sermon, the people listening were cut to the heart. Only then is it possible that the insurmountable obstacle of sin is overcome. Our chains fall off, our hearts are free, and we are released to rise up and follow Jesus with joy in our hearts all the way to heaven.